Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids Podcast, where we explore what connects us all in our yoga practice and in our lives. This is where I talk to people about their stories, who they are, what they've been through, and where they're going. And in this podcast, that's what we explore. I believe deep down inside, we're all connected, which explains why we bring ourselves to the top of our mat every day. Welcome to the Heartbreak Kids. So welcome to the next edition of the Heartbreak Kids. I'm here with Sarah Jane Burkholz. And I met her in India just this past year. And, you know, I was really intrigued because she has a beautiful practice and, you know, she's doing some pretty cool things in Salt Lake City. And, you know, I've seen her on social media and stuff. And I wanted to have her on the Heartbreak Kids to kind of share her story. We kind of connected in Mysore, but I want to know more. So Sarah Jane, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Taylor.
So let's get started with like some background. Just tell me, I mean, you know, there's sort of this mystery that happens around authorized teachers. And like part of the, you know, the podcast is to sort of, you know, make authorized teachers real to a certain extent. And so share a little bit about like your history, like, you know, what kind of kid were you like in high school? Like, what was your family like? Where did you grow up? Those kind of things.
Okay. Well, I grew up here in Salt Lake City, Utah, home of the Mormon pioneers. And I was adopted at birth. I was 3 days old when I was adopted from a Mormon family. So I grew up in a very religious household. I did not vibe with that religion, like really ever. And so I just became a little bit rebellious as a teenager and kind of started to find my own way into the world.
What does a little rebellious mean?
Well, I refused to go to church from the time I was 12, I think. I mean, once in a while I would go, but I just kind of stepped away from it and tried to just find the truth in my own way. So in high school, I became attracted to like the Grateful Dead and the whole hippie scene and kind of, yeah, fell into that. I was kind of a deadhead as a high school student.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know plenty of deadheads for sure. 100%. Like, and travel around and, you know, they basically go show to show. Actually, a lot of yoga people are deadheads.
Yeah, I know. It's true.
It's like a really common thing. Yeah. So why didn't you jive with the religion? You know, like I know enough about you where I know that, you know, and also from following your social media, like, why didn't you jive with it? Like, isn't there a certain spirituality with a religion or like Mormonism? Is that what it's called?
I think there is for some people. Yeah. I mean, they don't like it to be called that, but yeah, that's what it's known as.
Okay.
For some people, it's really spiritual and it really helps them a lot in their lives. But for me, it always just, I guess, to be honest, it just gave me a weird feeling to be around it. And it kind of creeped me out, to be honest.
Gotcha.
I don't know. I don't know what it was. It was just like, it was creepy to me.
Huh. Interesting. I mean, you know, especially because like I see so many like spiritual things that, you know, like you kind of post on your Instagram and it's interesting that you felt creeped out by it. And so you like rebelled, like, did you like, I mean, I'm assuming that you still have contact with your family.
Oh yeah. I'm very close with my family and I love them dearly. And I totally respect, you know, if they want to be religious in a certain way, that's fine with me. Yeah, it just wasn't for me.
So how did they take it when you didn't want to go to church every, I mean, did they fight you on it or what?
Well, yeah, they prayed for me, let's put it that way. And they still do. But it, like, most of my siblings are not LDS anymore. They all fell away from the church, and we all kind of, yeah, none of us really vibed with it, turns out.
Huh. Interesting, for sure. And so, you know, so let's talk about high school. Like, you know, you said at 12, you stopped going to church. Like, was there a major shift that was happening, like in your, like your schoolwork and stuff?
In high school? Yeah. I mean, I had already like stepped away from that religion, but in my schoolwork, yeah, I don't know. I just wasn't super interested in the things that I was learning in school for the most part. And yeah, I never ended up actually graduating. I got my GED and just kind of forged my own path through life. I went to a lot of shows and actually got really into meditation and exercise. I grew up on the swim team, so I was already exercising a lot, and I learned a lot of discipline through that and learned how to connect to my body. And there's a lot of breathing and swimming, and you have to really learn how to connect with your lungs and how to breathe correctly. And also you gain a great lung capacity through that. So I think swimming was pretty awesome because I learned all about flow and how I could, you know, through my body, through exercising, through movement, I learned how to find meditation and a meditative flow, which yoga does obviously as well.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's funny. I have like a negative buoyancy. I can swim. I'm a good swimmer, but like literally I've never been able to float. Like I like sink to the bottom. I could never be on the swim team. It like takes so much effort from me. It's ridiculous. You know, fun fact about me, but, good job on that. I could never been on the swim team ever. I struggled with it so much.
Maybe you should connect with a sadhu that could teach you plavani.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. I want to learn how to do that too.
Yeah. There's some really cool techniques. So you didn't graduate high school. Like, what was your plan? Like, yeah, so why, first off, why didn't you want to graduate? And like, how did you think that was not going to be like good for you? That wasn't going to be your path? And like, you know, I mean, give me the thought process behind it a little bit.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I was like 16 years old when I decided I wanted to become enlightened by the time I was 20. So that was like my goal in life. And yeah, it never happened for very long.
Not yet.
But I'm still working for it. So that was really my focus in life. And that was my goal, is just to really understand, you know, what I am, what this is. Why are we here? Who am I? You know, what is this? So that was really what I cared about. So school to me, like it just seemed like kind of a dead end, and it seemed just kind of false. I just cared about other things, I guess. I was really connecting with nature and really into hiking and being in the mountains. I lived really close to some beautiful mountains. So I, like, when I wasn't going to school, I was spending a lot of time up in the mountains, like hiking, camping, mountain biking, climbing, snowboarding, all of the things in the mountains. And I just really wanted to connect with nature. Yeah.
Well, then, I mean, that's awesome. I mean, I in Ohio, like, I mean, we connect to nature, but we don't have any mountains here. So it's like, I don't know if we don't get snowboarding here, although we do get a bunch of snow. And so that's really awesome. But I mean, you know, so what was like the picture for your life supposed to look like? I mean, you wanted to get enlightened, but I mean, but what else was there? Like, did you feel lost at times, or did you feel like you were crystal clear with what you wanted to do with your life?
I guess spiritually I was crystal clear, but practically I don't know. I viewed the world as being a complete illusion, and I could just see how our society was doing things in a way that was really dangerous to the future of the planet and to the future of humanity. And I was just really disillusioned with the way that people were running the world, I guess. And I just thought it was disgusting, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I still do. I still think that we've gone about things in a terrible way.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how do you feel right now?
Yeah.
We don't need to go down the rabbit hole right now.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can see how things have already changed so much for the worse. I mean, as far as nature goes and as far as the way we're treating the planet, it's just terrible.
Yeah, I agree. It seems like it's a never ending battle between, like, you know, is science real or is science not real? It begs the question, like, I mean, what did you do for a living? Like, you know, you drop out of high school and all that stuff. And I'm sure the listeners are like, well, how did this girl live? You know,
well,
what did
I
you
was
do
still
for
living
jobs?
I was still living at my parents' house, and they told me I could drop out and take my GED if I got a job. So I worked at a floral shop for a while. And then I got a job at a restaurant, and yeah, that's all I did. And then after that, I worked at, like, a natural food store. So I just had just normal high school type of jobs. So I made money, and I provided for myself as far as the things that I really needed. But of course, I depended on my parents for a place to live.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so, like, how, you know, I mean, it takes money to be a deadhead, you know, like,
true.
Yeah. And there's a total, like, drug scene that goes along with, like, being a deadhead. Like, were you were you just enmeshed into, like, the drug scene? Like, did you use drugs? Like, were you, like, do you feel like you had a issue with it or anything like that?
I definitely used a lot of psychedelics, a lot. And yeah, I smoked marijuana, but I didn't do any hard drugs. That was a huge part of my life for sure. I did a lot of that.
Yeah. And was that in high school, or was that, like, kind of after, yeah, like, you got your GED and stuff like that?
No, it was in high school, before, during, and after. Yeah, it went on for a while. But I think that the last time I did psychedelics, I was maybe 20, 21. I mean, I did it a long time after that too, but I quit doing it a lot when I was maybe 20 or 21.
Yeah.
I think 20, yeah. So it went on for maybe 4 years that I used a lot of psychedelics. Mostly acid.
And that's where you were traveling around the most with the Grateful Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I took LSD almost every show that I went to.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty common thing.
Yeah.
Like for dead shows.
For sure.
It's like a thing. Yeah. So let's transition a little bit. Like, I mean, let's talk a little bit about how you kind of came to yoga. Like, you know, like you just kind of spoke about, like, some spiritual things, like with, you know, Mother Nature or the earth and, like, the environment and stuff like that. I mean, mm-hmm. like, how did the yoga picture, or how did, like, the practice of yoga, like, become an option for you? Like, how did you find it?
I think through books, most of all. Like, when I was maybe 10, 11, 12, I came across a book with pictures of sadhus in it and a little overview of how they live their lives in India. And I was completely fascinated by that. And then I came across Be Here Now by Ram Dass and The Orange Book by Osho. And those books were really formative for me. And we didn't have the internet back then, so books.
Yeah.
Then I would peruse like New Age bookstores and just pick up everything that I could about spirituality. Yeah.
And why do you think you were drawn to it?
That's a good question. I think just a natural like urge to merge with nature and with the cosmos. I just think there was a natural hunger there. I just wanted, yeah, to be one with the cosmos. I was just a little hippie kid, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, do you identify as like a hippie kid? I mean, you're talking about a lot of that stuff, but I mean, do you, and no disrespect, but like, do you feel like that was like kind of the scene that you were in?
I think definitely it was part of the scene, but I was drawn to the scene because of that probably. And gotcha. Like the music was a huge part. Just, I think I'm a really auditory person. I just love good music. It's so powerful. And yeah, that was a big part of it. Just being able to connect with that live music like that was just really amazing.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
And so you get introduced to yoga, like, I mean, did through like these books, like when did you make it like sort of, you know, part of your spiritual practices?
I would say when I was a teenager, I definitely tried to meditate. And when I did use psychedelics, I used it in a way that was, you know, it was ceremonial. And I had the desire to meditate when I was taking them. But now, yeah, I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. And so when you, but like, when did you make sort of the jump between like, you know, like you're this kid, like following the dead, you know, like working at the floral shop to all of a sudden, like, I'm going to be practicing yoga like every single day. Like, tell me what that journey looked like.
Okay. So I tried to do what the books instructed me to do. And now that I know, you know, how to do asana practice, I was doing it completely wrong. But at the same time, I got really into just kind of moving my body in a natural way and connecting with my breath and just kind of moving more creatively and intuitively. And I was really into dancing at the same time. So dance was really big for me. Just not taking classes or anything, just doing it in a natural way. So I think that was really my first mind-body connection, even though I didn't really know what I was doing. But I would try out some asanas and mostly like just sitting in Padmasana and things like that. But when I first took a yoga class, I had already been practicing Ashtanga with David Swenson's VHS tape for about a year. Nice. Yeah. So I consider him to be my first yoga teacher.
I mean, I had his little flip book, you know, like I started back in like, you know, I guess, man, I don't even know when I started, 2006. And I had a Rodney Yee tape, DVD. It was power yoga. It kicked my ass. And then I had David Swenson's Ashtanga, you know, manual or whatever it's called. And then I had like a Richard Freeman, like, you know, DVD as well.
Yes. Yeah. Classic for sure. Yeah. That, I always wanted that book, but I just couldn't afford it. But I had the tape. I bought like a bootlegged copy on eBay.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Don't tell him.
Seriously.
But I had injured myself from mountain running. I like hurt my ankle so many times that it just kept rolling. So I had to kind of give up the running. And that's when I was like, okay, it's time to like really learn how to do yoga. So, and we had the internet by now. So I got on, you know, and did a little bit of research, and I was like, okay, there's lots of different styles of yoga. Where do I start? What do I do? And I came across a little online quiz, like, that was supposed to show you what style is best for you. So I took that, and my result was Ashtanga. So I did a little research on Ashtanga, and I was like, oh yeah, this sounds badass. Like, it's traditional, you know, it looks really cool, and I'm going to try it. And I tried it, and I never looked back.
I mean, literally, like, once you started doing it, you never looked back?
No, I never tried another style for years and years. And then after a while, I was like, oh, I should try it, you know, just see what else is out there. And then I spent maybe a few months. I had a pass at a certain yoga studio, and I was like, I'll just try all the classes here. So I tried out a bunch of other different things for a few months. And then I was very reassured that Ashtanga was for me.
And why do you think it is for you? You know, like, I mean, like, what is it that has drawn you to the practice? I mean, first off, before you answer that, like, how long ago was this when you had, like, you know, the David Swenson, you know, VHS tape?
I got it in 98, like, after my second child was born. So she was a newborn or maybe a few months old, and I had a 3-year-old son. And yeah, it was when I was a young mom. So that, and we didn't really have much Ashtanga here in Salt Lake, but there was one teacher that had studied with Richard Freeman, and he was really good. So I figured that out after I had been doing the video at home for about a year. And I went to his class, and I realized I've been doing everything, like, with the worst alignment in the world. I had no idea. So he was, like, correcting every single asana. And I was like, wow, okay, so I need a teacher. And so I went to his class religiously, and then he just quit teaching Ashtanga. So that was a real bummer.
Yeah, it's, like, heartbreaking, isn't it? Like, when that happens.
Yeah, it was. But he was great. He was not traditional at all. So I still, like, really wanted to try, you know, real Ashtanga. And I had been exposed to Richard Freeman through him and through his DVD, like you were. And he lives in Colorado, or he did at the time. And then I met another teacher who had studied with him that was living in Salt Lake. And he's like, oh, I'm going to take you to a Mysore class in Boulder. So we went there, and that was my first Mysore class, was with Richard.
I mean, I'm sure that was an amazing experience too, right?
Oh my God. I was so nervous, so scared. And I went in, and I was just like, oh my gosh, I hope I have this memorized, because I had been using the tape the whole time. And yeah, it was amazing. I was instantly just in love.
Do you mean, like, with the feeling of, like, having a teacher, or, like, how he held the space, or, I mean, what was it about that you loved?
Everything. Like, his style, his personality, his shala, all the people there, just the sweat, the heat, just mat to mat, tons of people just moving. Oh my God, it was so overwhelmingly amazing. I loved it.
And so I'm assuming you went back there, right? I mean, that was just the first time.
I went as much as I could, and I still just want to keep practicing with him and Mary for the rest of my life. Yeah. They're so wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, besides, like, Shirachi, would you consider Richard Freeman also, like, one of your main teachers?
Oh yeah, for sure. And Mary Taylor, his wife too. She's a goddess. Yeah. Yeah, they're wonderful. I can't say enough good things about them.
Yeah, it's crazy because he came to Columbus, and I did his workshop, and, you know, I was kind of enthralled. I don't even know if that's the right word, but there was something like where you just didn't know that 3 hours passed. And yeah. It just sort of swept away, like he has some sort of magic about him. And the workshop was over on a Sunday, and I had to teach Monday morning Mysore. And at the time, it was called Morning Mysore Club. Before it was Ashtanga Yoga Columbus, it was called the Morning Mysore Club. And we ran it out of a studio that had a bunch of different, you know, styles that they taught. And I remember I came in, I was practicing. I was like, today's a really weird day. I had amazing practice. But there were so many people in the studio. Like we had like 30 or 40 people. And then all of a sudden, like I see Mary Taylor walk in and like put her mat down. And I was like, oh my God. And she like put her mat down and I was like, I'm Taylor. I was at your workshop. Thank you so much for coming to Columbus and all this stuff. And she's like, I just want to be here and soak up the energy. And I was like, let me know how I can help you. And as soon as I got done with that, I saw Richard in the corner of my eye. And I was like, please do not let Richard Freeman come into my Mysore class.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, God, please send him to the other room. And I was like, I can't do it. Like, I just won't be able to handle it. And I mean, because Mary Taylor's like, she's so grounded, but he's like, I don't even know where he's at.
Right.
Yeah. And so he didn't come into my Mysore class. And I was like, thank you, God, for that. Because the whole room would have been like freaking out.
Oh my God, I would die.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, still having Mary Taylor in the room, and she was like, you know what,
yes.
She's like, you're doing a great job of holding space for all of these people. And I was like, thanks.
Oh, that's so sweet.
It's like 8 or 9 years ago. It was freaking crazy.
And her practice is so amazing.
It's so good. It's amazing.
Oh my God. I remember, yeah, she was in that first class that I went to and I was dying. I'm like, who is this woman? Like, she's doing fourth series and she's in her 50s, I think.
It's unbelievable. She practiced second series and she did it and it was immaculate. Like, it was,
yes.
It was all very put together. So that's my Richard Freeman and Mary Taylor story after an amazing workshop with them. Yeah.
So
let's talk a little bit about, you know, your trips to Mysore. Like, what compelled you to go to Mysore?
Well, just learning about Mysore when Pattabhi Joyce was there was just like fascinating. Like I said, I was a young mom when I first started and it was just like a dream that I thought would never be able to happen. And it's like, I just always wanted to go from the second I heard about it. So when Pattabhi Joyce was teaching here in the US, I always wanted to go to that too, but I just, you know, I was a young mom. I didn't have a huge income or the ability to travel and I didn't want to leave my kids either. So it was never an option until they got older. And the first time I went to India actually was 2009, right after Pattabhi Joyce passed away. And I had heard stories like, oh, you're going to go there and no one will even notice you. No one will give you attention. There's tons of people there. You're better off just to study with an authorized teacher. So I just always had that in my mind that it's not even worth it. I should have gone and studied with Sharatji in retrospect, but I did not. I went to India and I did a quote unquote Ashtanga teacher training. That was my first trip to India, but I was just in love with India. It was like, I was like, okay, I'm coming back and I'm going to go to Mysore. I don't care what people say. I want to go. And then I went to Sharatji's workshops when he started coming to Encinitas. So I went to a bunch of his workshops. And the first time I met him, I was like, oh God, I've got to keep studying with this guy. I want him to be my teacher, like besides Richard and Mary, of course, but I needed to study with him. He was awesome. I loved it. I loved that he wasn't even that much older than me and that he had just grown up, you know, doing the practice. He was just saturated in the practice of Ashtanga yoga. So the first time I ever practiced with him was in the US. And then I started applying to go practice with him. And I swear I applied 5 times and never got in. And I finally got the guts up to talk to him at one of his workshops. And I was like, Shiraji, I've applied so many times. Why can't I get in? And he's like, you apply again. And then, so I did that year and I got in. And wow. So my first trip to Mysore was after I had done a number of workshops with him, maybe like 5 or 4 or something like that. That was how I got into it.
Why did you think it was important to like have a teacher in the first place? Like, I mean, you know, you mentioned alignment, you know, like the guy who was, you know, teaching you first and, you know, all of this stuff. But like, I mean, why did you feel like, you know, like having a Richard or having a Sharad, like why did that, you know, why was that important to you?
I probably got the idea from reading Be Here Now by Ram Dass. And he was just always writing about his guru and how important it was and how dedicated he was. And so that just lit the little spark in me, I think, hearing it from somebody else and reading about it and the value of having a really special teacher like that. I was like, oh yeah, I can see that, you know, you can just kind of let go of everything else and let this person guide you if you trust them. And yeah, I love that. I love being able to surrender and just be able to trust somebody and let them guide me to the right tools. I mean, of course, I'm doing the work myself, but I just love the idea of having a great teacher to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you look at, you know, obviously your teachers, like what are the main qualities that you look at that you sort of admire or that you try and, you know, kind of get yourself?
I would say like the sattvic quality, like somebody that has a beautiful heart, that's really dedicated to yoga and that like cares about teaching, you know, things as they are taught to them, like preserving a lineage is really, really a cool thing because it's such an old lineage that I just want to learn from somebody that's learned from somebody that's learned from somebody that goes all the way back to Shiva, right? That's the whole idea. So yeah. I love that idea. I know we don't have that in the US so much, but I think it's really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. And so what do you feel like, you know, today going to Mysore, like, I mean, what do you feel like it teaches you? And what are some of these lessons that you've learned on the mat? Like, I mean, have you gotten closer to enlightenment? You know, I mean, I mean, tell me about it.
I have no idea. I'm pretty sure I've had a few flashes. I know I have had flashes throughout my life, even from being a young child. I've had plenty of flashes, nothing that lasts more than a couple of minutes or maybe 10 minutes at the most. But they actually probably come less now, now that I'm older and I have more shit that I'm working through that I've gathered over my lifetime. But definitely I have the idea of the proper way to live my life. And I have a lot of more guidelines. And yeah, I think having discipline is really important. And I feel like when I do get a little bit older and I have more time to just sit and practice pranayama and meditation, that maybe it'll come more often. I don't ever expect to actually be enlightened all the time now that I can see that that's probably not going to happen this lifetime, but next I'm lifetime. Okay with that. Maybe in like 10,000 more.
10,000 more? Wow, you got a lot of work to do, girl.
I'm guessing. I think I do, yeah.
Yeah. You know, what do you feel like the practice has taught you, though? You know, like you talked about discipline. you know, but like, what do you feel like? I mean, why are you compelled to show up on a daily basis and like do this work?
Good question. Sometimes I ask myself that and just wonder about it. But honestly, it's just such a great way to live your life. I just see the results in the health of my body, the health of my mind. I feel like I would be a mental mess if I didn't have yoga. I just can't imagine. I feel like I just really need it. I need that daily ritual. It keeps me sane. It keeps me, you know, on the right path. And like ultimately, I just vibe with it. It's such a good practice. And I feel like probably I have learned enough about the practice and about my body that I can some days, you know, take things a little differently than what Shiraji says we have to do every day. But after hearing him talk so many times, then I don't feel so guilty if I do have to take a day off or if I do need to take a short day. And he's always saying you need to, you know, put your family first. So if something else comes up, then with my family or my work that has to be a priority, then it has to. But otherwise, I do try to keep a really regular practice, and I've seen a lot of results. I've had a lot of back injuries, like herniated disc problems, scoliosis, lots of back pain, and I cannot believe how much this asana practice has saved my back, literally. I mean, there's been many times in my life where I couldn't even walk because I was in so much pain. But it, like, even my doctors wanted me to have surgery. Two different doctors, spinal specialists, told me I needed to have surgery. And I just was like, no, you are not cutting into my spine ever. So I just really learned how to listen to my body and keep practicing. Just, and Richard and Mary were a great help with that. They really helped me through that and gave me so much good advice. Like, you can practice like you're a 90-year-old person. It's okay. Just do your practice, modify, do it how you can, you know, be respectful of your body's boundaries. So I think it's really important to try to keep your body healthy, and it's a great reason to practice.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, but specifically, why do you think it works for you? I mean, what's the thing that on a consistent basis, is it just the discipline that you talked about? You know, is it just the health that comes with it? Or why not hot yoga, or why not vinyasa style yoga? Like, why do you think Ashtanga works for you better than any other ones?
Well, it's just a good formula. I mean, you go through the same asanas in the same order almost every day. I'm mostly doing intermediate series. I did start doing third series for a while, but I injured my arm over a year ago and it's starting to feel a little bit better, but there's a lot of just really intense arm stuff in third series. So I think intermediate series for me, just, it's really good for my spine and correcting the scoliosis. It's just a good formula. I mean, it's genius. Every time I do it, I see these new patterns emerging, and I see like different reasons why it's ordered in the way that it's ordered. And it's brilliant. I just, whoever made it up was a genius. It works for me. That's all I can say. Like for a while I was substituting a lot of vinyasa classes, and I don't really know how to teach vinyasa. I'm pretty good at being creative because I do know a lot of asanas through Ashtanga. And so I was just being creative and doing it with them when I taught, which was fun, but it killed my body. I could never do that just as a regular practice.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing like what people share that the practice has taught them. It's really amazing.
It's a good practice.
Yeah, it's an amazing practice. So let's talk about your teaching, you know, like what about you know, like, how is the Mysore practice going for you? I mean, especially during these difficult times, like, but like, tell us a little bit about like your community.
Okay. So I teach at a climbing gym, the Front Climbing Club in Salt Lake, and we actually have two locations, and we've got a Mysore program here that's, during Monday through Friday, during the weekdays, we have two Mysore classes a day, except for moon days. And then we have a class on Sundays. And Sammy Brown and I are the Mysore teachers here. And it's so fun because we have a community of really outdoorsy type people, just like we were. Like, we both grew up climbing and spending lots of time in the mountains. And so it's a lot of like-minded people. And also, we actually get a lot of people coming that don't climb and just come for the yoga. But it's a great community, and we have a beautiful space. I'm super grateful for it. And we don't own the studio or the space. We don't even rent it out. We just work here. And I really like the owner of the place. He kind of lets us do whatever we want. And I'm the director of the yoga program here. So I've just really tried to put a big focus on Ashtanga. Although we do offer like vinyasa and restorative classes too, because not everyone wants to do Ashtanga, and that's fine. But I try to, you know, hire teachers, most teachers that do Ashtanga, even though they might not teach it. It's been a great program. We've been doing it maybe 6-7 years, and it's really grown, and we're about to start offering some longer classes too.
Awesome. You know, it's funny because Sammy was one of the maybe like the first five people that I met in Mysore, and like we jived immediately because he's just like a down home good all around kind of dude, you know. And so it's such like a, you know, so I saw him this past year too, and it was like, you know, 10 years later or 8 years later, whatever it was. And I'm just sitting there going like, man, it's like, you know, it was just really cool to see people grow and see people change and, you know, like still come to Mysore. It's really cool.
He introduced me to you when we were there.
Yeah. I was going to say that's like when I met you. So
yeah, you were with your kids. They're so cute.
I mean, I'm trying to do this podcast and they're just like basically yelling downstairs. They just started, school, which hybrid school or something like that. And so they get home from school and they're just like running around the neighborhood. And so I don't know, you probably heard dogs and cats, and kids all over the place. So
great.
Yeah. Well, it's really awesome that, you know, you have a community of like-minded people, you know, that you feel supported by the owner and all of that stuff. I mean, that's what it takes in order to run a Mysore program. So,
right. You know, I can't imagine like trying to own my own shala though. That's terrifying to me. Kudos to you. It's amazing.
it's a lot of work. I'm surrounded by a bunch of amazing people that without other people, I couldn't do it. And I'm sure you kind of feel the same way. The other teachers and Sammy and like the owner, like it really takes like all hands on deck, if you know what I mean.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. There's no way I could do it by myself.
Yeah. Well, Sarah, I want to thank you for being on the show today and sharing a little bit about your past and your story and, you know, sharing all of the details that you shared. It was really great to get to know you. And, you know, it's like if any of the listeners are ever in Salt Lake City, make sure you look up Sarah Jane and Sammy's program in Salt Lake. So,
yeah, hit us up. Thanks so much, Taylor.
Yeah, so thanks for being on the show.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. If you want more information about Ashtanga Yoga, visit ashtangayogacolumbus.com. You can also check out my website, which is taylorhuntyoga.com. See you guys next time.